This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. Time now for a look at Tuesday's headlines, and we begin with a number of stories related to the war on terror, starting with Iran and its pursuit of a nuclear program, which many around the world believe is centered on a nuclear weapons program. As we reported last week, Russia is poised now to begin fueling Iran's major nuclear plant at Bushehr, and that means the installation of enriched uranium fuel rods. According to former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, that means Israel only has a very slim window of opportunity if it wants to launch a military strike against Bushehr. Earlier on Tuesday, Bolton told me Israel basically has until August 21st, because after that date, they'd run into some major complications.
Once the fuel rods are in the reactor, or even right next to the reactor, if Israel or anyone else attack them, almost certainly the consequence of that attack would be the release of radioactivity into the atmosphere, or because Bushehr is right on the shore of the Persian Gulf, possibly into the waters of the Gulf. And that's why most military observers have felt that if Israel were going to attack the Bushehr reactor, it would do so before the fuel rods were loaded.
Bolton says Israel would still have some military options, although not at Bushehr after August 21st. He says Israel should be taking advantage of this timetable, but he doesn't think that they're necessarily going to.
You know, if they were going to do anything, they certainly wouldn't be advertising it. I think they've got a very real dilemma. Do they only attack Bushehr, or do they go after the uranium enrichment program too? And that's why I'm, as far as one can tell, I'm not sure the Israelis are going to do anything about this reactor. I think that's a big mistake on their part. And we'll wait and see what happens in the next few days, but it doesn't look like it as of now.
As for the U.S. role in this, absolutely no one is suggesting that the Obama administration is ready to take up the military option. In fact, Ambassador Bolton told me he believes that it's been obvious for some time now that this administration is resigned to the fact that Iran will have nuclear weapons.
I think the administration's fallback position is a willingness to accept a nuclear weapons-capable Iran. You know, they'll say they don't like it and so on, but fundamentally, there's no other way to understand their actual policy. Forget the rhetoric for a minute, but there's no way to understand what they're actually doing unless they are prepared to accept a nuclear Iran.
Elsewhere in the war on terror, now shifting our focus to Iraq, a homicide bomber sat for hours today among hundreds of unprotected Army recruits before detonating nail-packed explosives strapped to his body, killing himself as well as 61 other people and casting new doubt in the minds of some on the ability of Iraqi forces to protect that land as U.S. troops continue to head home. At the end of this month, the U.S. mission in Iraq officially changes, with Iraqis taking the security lead, and U.S. troop numbers will be down to just about 50,000. So many people were lined up because jobs are extremely scarce in Iraq. Some 1,000 people had been there before dawn for a good spot in line because they so need the work, and some, even after being treated for injuries from this terrorist attack, returned to get in line for a job with the Iraqi security forces. Some significant chaos at the Turkish embassy in Tel Aviv, Israel on Tuesday, as a Palestinian man armed apparently with only a knife was taken into custody, but only after quite a disturbance. What we know right now is that he's a Palestinian and that he had a knife, according to a Turkish official. But there had been several reports of a shooting incident at the embassy, and that had prompted police and emergency crews to race to the scene. Other reports indicated the man was screaming hostile phrases aimed at Jews. Emergency aid continues to be rushed to Pakistan in the wake of the devastating floods in that region. Some 1,500 people have died as a result of the ongoing floods, and some relief groups estimate north of 20 million people impacted by the ongoing floods. It's been difficult to get supplies to some areas, and another complicating factor from this is that local extremist organizations are actually relatively competent at providing for the needs of people in these sorts of crises, and that makes it easier for these extremist groups to recruit into their terrorist organizations. Back here at home, the state of California in the headlines for a number of reasons. First of all, the gay marriages that were supposed to resume on Wednesday will not resume until at least December, and probably even later than that, if ever. That's because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has approved for now a stay of a lower federal court judge's decision to rescind Proposition 8 and allow gay marriage to continue in the state of California as it did for a few months back in 2008. The district court judge, Von Walker, ruled last week that August 18th would be the day for so-called gay marriages to resume, but the appellate court says that that will not be the case since there are critical issues being discussed in this case, and it's best for the appeals process to play out before any official changes take place in the law and people are allowed to move forward with their plans as a result of a potential law change. However, those in favor of Proposition 8 could be facing a major hurdle, as apparently the court has asked the attorneys in this case to explain who exactly has legal standing in this case. In other words, who would be harmed as a result of gay marriages continuing in the state of California. The answer to that question is absolutely everyone, according to Robert Knight of the American Civil Rights Union. He's also a Washington-based correspondent for Coral Ridge Ministries. You can hear my full conversation with him at worldnetdaily.com and dateline.radioamerica.org. That's also where you can hear my full conversation with former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. While you're also there, you can hear my conversation with California-based political analyst and strategist Carol Leibaugh. And that conversation centers around California's latest major financial crisis. Last week, of course, we told you about the $26 billion spending package approved by Congress to help fund teaching and first responder positions in states around the country that have not been able to balance their budgets. Well, California is first on that list, $19 billion in the hole. In my conversation with Carol, we'll discuss what's behind this constant financial crisis in the Golden State, what's been done to date to try and address it, but obviously hasn't worked very well, and what would actually need to be done in order to put this problem behind the people of California. And finally today, the man behind one of the most indelible baseball images in history has passed away at the age of 86. Bobby Thompson played for the New York Giants and hit the shot heard round the world to clinch the pennants for the New York Giants in 1951 over the hated intercity rival Brooklyn Dodgers. That home run in the bottom of the ninth off of Dodger Ralph Branca led to that famous call by broadcaster Russ Hodges. It also propelled the Giants into the World Series, where they eventually lost to the New York Yankees. Definitely one of the indelible sports images of the 20th century. Bobby Thompson, a three-time All-Star, in addition to that iconic moment in the game's history, again passing away Monday in Georgia at the age of 86. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.